Blog Talk Radio.
What a fun party. Check 1, 2. Y'all having fun? How late can you stay up? All night? More volume, please. Watch this.
Good evening, and welcome everybody to Nothing Compares to You in memory of Prince Rogers Nelson. And I want to thank all of you who are listening online as well as joining me on the telephone for this special tribute to the one that I call my brother, my friend, Mr. Prince Rogers Nelson. Let me just start off by saying that this in particularly has been very difficult for me. It's been a death that I am still processing and trying to come to terms of acceptance with, but I don't think anyone who's familiar with Prince and his legacy and his music can just close the door on such a phenomenal artist and incredible human being. And so tonight, after much contemplation, I have decided to put my efforts into doing a tribute to him to help those of us who are still struggling with the acceptance of his departure. And let's just come together. Let's unite in the spirit of Prince Rogers Nelson and just share our memories. And, you know, if Prince were here, he would say that he would never want to be a memory. He would want to be an experience. And if you've ever attended one of his concerts, if you've ever held a conversation with him, you would indeed agree that this is an experience. I want to first start off by saying that this is not a concert, even though periodically I will be playing some songs by Prince, but the audio on Blog Talk would not do him justice, and if he were here again, he would demand that I cut the music off due to the poor quality of sound. But just in reflection of him and in reflection of some of the jewels that he gave us in music, we will play snippets of some of his music. So I want to start off tonight just by expressing my feelings about this tremendous loss that we have all suffered, and my personal experience with the artist, or Prince Rogers Nelson. I first encountered him through some mutual friends back in the early 80s, and this was before he was famous. This was before he was well known. And I can tell you that the spirit of that young man was one of humbleness. He was kind. He was funny. And back then we called him Skipper. So he would kill me. But always had just a very sweet, angelic type of spirit. And I know when I use that term angelic, people probably reflect back to the earlier days of Prince Rogers Nelson and say, what? But yes, he's always been spiritually inclined. He's always been very soft-spoken, very polite, believed in chivalry. He was just an awesome individual. So that was my first encounter with him. And then my second encounter with him was in 2004 when we had a long conversation about some music. And I got an opportunity to witness his growth in spirituality. I've watched him evolve over the years and how he became a master of his craft, and still that same angelic spirit empowered by knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And so I can tell you that a friend of mine called me on April the 21st and asked me what was going on with the rumor that Prince had died. And I said, a rumor indeed. I say, but I don't know. But I said, the shit ain't funny. That's what I said. And a few minutes later, I turned on the news. And I can tell you that from that day to this day, my life or my personal being has not been the same. If I had to sum it up, I would say that our universe is missing something. And for those of us who are artists and musicians, it's personal. And it's like losing a family member, but there's no closure, There was no funeral. There was no, you know, real public memorial. It wasn't a time for us to really come to grips with it, in my opinion, and say goodbye or pay our respects. So the only thing that we have is the music. And Prince said in one of his songs, or I think a couple of his songs, that he would never die. So, and I agree, because the music will live on, the spirit will live on. My father used to tell me that the remembrance of anything is the spirit, and that spirit lives as long as you remember. So, of course, we will always remember Prince. So now I have expressed myself. So, of course, those of you in the listening audience, I want you all to come on and press 1 on your keypad and just share with us your experience of Prince. So I'm going to take the first call, and it's area code 415, last four numbers, 1072. Your mic is now live. Who are we speaking with, and where are you calling from?
My name is Brother Jamil Muhammad. I'm calling from the San Francisco Bay Area. Assalamu alaikum to you, sister, and to the audience, peace to one and all. How are you?
Well, alaikum salam, sir. How are you?
Praise God. It's good to hear you smile, sister. I can hear that all the way out here in California. And I thank you for that wonderful spirit. This is a program that tuning in to it and hearing your introduction, if you don't mind me saying, and I'm going to say my piece and then and listen to the other callers and the interaction. Prince is perhaps the most important musical artist of the combination of the 20th and 21st century. This does not mean that he is or the Beatles or Michael Jackson or James Brown or any other icons who came, Duke Ellington, who came through during this period of time. But for reasons of Prince's continual musical metamorphosis and for his continued brilliant application of his intellect to his business affairs, that he was willing to fight corporate entities to actually control his own music and how it was disseminated and distributed and understood and perceived by his audience. There was none that was his equal. So you began talking about your personal experiences with Prince. I only met him twice in my life. Mm-hmm. I never was able to have a deep conversation with him because due to the, you know, the circumstances that we were in, in Atlanta, Georgia, when I had the pleasure of serving as the Southern Regional Minister of the Nation of Islam in that area, pardon me, our regional captain, Brother Curtis Muhammad, secured contracts with Prince's production company and road company for us to secure him in his concerts in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So when he came to Atlanta and performed at the what was then known as the Coca-Cola Amphitheater, on International Drive, which was Stewart Road back then. And he was receiving guests. So funny, sister. He was receiving guests, and as he shook hands in the receiving line, I had the pleasure to stand there next to him and watch the people as they were affected by his persona. And I guess you saw this in 2004 in particular when you had that lengthy conversation with him about music. But Prince was a gracious gentleman, and he received everyone. And when he would talk, he talked in a low voice, a deep voice like that. And he would speak to people. You know, and I remember
him, yes.
I remember him greeting all the people. He used to travel by himself and with his crew, of course. And one young lady came up, beautiful young lady, came up and talked about his music. I don't think she was trying to be a groupie in the traditional sense and, hey, big boy. It was none of that. But she came up to Prince and she started talking about his music and she began to cry about her affection for what he had done for her musically and for her spirit. She said, and I would just like to give you, I'd like to have the honor to just give you a hug. And Prince said, it would be a great honor, but I don't believe my wife would like that. See? Now this is important for us to note, because his wife was not standing there. He was practicing
right.
what he was going to practice, whether she was there or not. He showed her respect. And it's often more important to show respect when you're away from your spouse than it is when you're with them. But he showed respect.
Right.
He showed decency. He showed restraint. And when you're confronted with the sheer volume and massive content of female attention that Prince got, for him to have that kind of dignity and decency was remarkable, and that stuck with me for a long time. Later that night, we went to the after party that Prince had, and it was over at the 579 Club over there on, I want to say it was on Piedmont Avenue in downtown Atlanta, an after party spot. It's been about almost 18, 20 years since this happened. But it was a funny thing, though, sister. We get in there, and Prince and his band are playing. He's got the New Power Generation lineup in there, and they're playing. And, I mean, they are really in the pocket. Everybody's grooving. Prince is at the piano, running the whole show from just a piano. And he's playing, and he's shining the spotlight on his side men and women. And the crowd is in the groove, is jam-packed. Everybody's getting it together. Prince has asked that there be no smoking in the building, so the building, you can breathe the air. The only thing thick in the atmosphere was music and vibes, like good vibes. So Prince is kicking it, you know?
Right.
He brings out, he says, I'm going to present my special guest tonight, the world's greatest entertainer. Everybody's like, who could Prince be talking about as the world's greatest entertainer? Prince said, Doug E. Fresh. So Doug E. Fresh comes out the back, right? And so Prince and Prince band, they sag right into it, and Doug grabs the microphone. Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, they beatbox it. The crowd goes crazy. I mean, and Doug is kicking it. And I mean, Prince looked up from the piano and looked at the crowd like, damn, this used to be my crowd 5 minutes ago. And man, we all cracked up, because there was that healthy, loving brotherhood, that exposure that Prince was willing to give other musicians and performers to actually perform. Everybody who did duets with him, from Larry Graham on down to Chaka Khan, and other musicians who were on stage with Prince, talked about him as a consummate professional, and he could have blinded the lights out of anybody. But he was a great, humble brother, and that came off to me that night. I really thank you for letting me tell this story, because I haven't told it in this way in a long time. But your show tonight has me thinking about the importance of Prince to an entire generation of people who moved from the appetites of the flesh that Prince so adequately and articulately expressed in the early 80s and the late 70s, you know, he came up and did his thing, you know, Sexy Dancer and Soft and Wet and Purple Rain and The Beautiful Ones, all the way up Diamonds and Pearl. He kept growing and growing and developing to the point where his music began to take on serious social concerns in the society. And I think that was the kind of growth curve that all of us should be on if we haven't already been on it. So I'm just moved, sister. I thank you for letting me take up this much time
Brother, thank you, because every experience is very important, and you really touched on some things. I'm going to take another call, but Brother Jamil, stay right there with me for a minute if you don't have to go, because you and I are going to talk about something that Prince was somewhat the innovator of, and it's not just in music, but it's also in character. But right now we're going to take this call out of the ATL. I think I know who this is. Last four numbers, 2596.
As-salamu
Your
alaykum.
Mic is live. Walaikum salam. How are you, Brother Seven?
I am fine. And assalamu alaikum to Minister, Brother Minister Jamil.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. And walaikum salam to you.
Yes, sir. Look forward to new beginnings coming soon, Brother Jamil. But to stick with what it is for tonight, everyone can claim that they're a fan, but not many can claim to be a mind mate, not a soul mate, but a mind mate to Prince. He definitely, as I was expressing with my sister earlier, he didn't create just music. He created children, because if I remember correctly and aptly, he looked at his music as his children. And the reason why his children weren't all over YouTube and all over these websites and things of that nature, because he didn't want his children, as a good parent, just put out there like that. And much respect that he was able to harness that and keep that his entire career and his entire musical life. But if I may, I wrote something not as a show of me, but to connect in a way with his mind as he showed it through his children. It's a piece that I wrote called A Place of Love. It's a piece of poetry. And if I'm permitted to, I would like to read that poetry. And those who absolutely know and listen, because you could hear anything, but when you really listen, you'll understand the magnitude of Prince Rogers Nelson, the artist. A place of love. In your arms is where I want to live and die. As long as you're with me, I believe I can fly. To heights past clouds, only you and I are there. The love so pure, angels stop and stare. In your eyes is the beauty of a sunrise. Your face is a sight to behold for all time. The epitome of all that is true. God made his angels from the blueprint of you. Everything about you is like a brand new paradise. In your arms, my love, I want to live and die. You're my sanctuary where I can trust you with my soul. And those times I could just explode, you keep me in control. I love you silently, knowing that it's right. With you by my side, my heart soars to new heights. Journey through time to a different universe. Take you intimately with the blessing of God first. And your face was the last thing I saw and then went blind. Then it would be only of you I could conceive in my mind. Like a mirror where your reflection used to be, I'd turn down air to live, because you're all I'd need. Without you, there would be no need to have life. In your arms, baby, I want to live and die.
Wow.
From listening.
Let me ask you,
yes,
is that yours?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. For those who absolutely listen and could hear the mind and the heart of Prince as he wrote, I came up with that listening through time or listening through the years, and especially the Emancipation album. So even though, you know, hopefully I don't get any hate mail after this, when I Want to Be Your Lover came out, they played it so much on the radio, I couldn't stand it. I couldn't. It was those records, Soft and Wet. There was Bambi and the first and second album as it was playing more. And I still hadn't gotten to the Genius. But when 1999 came out, yes, they played that. In Detroit, they had a legendary DJ, the Electrifying Mojo, for those on the line who may have been from that era. But, yes, he had the Mothership. And it was P-Funk, Funkadelic, P-Funk Parliament, and it was Prince.
He was on WGPR, wasn't he?
Yes, sir. 107.5.
7 points? Yes, sir.
10 o'clock. And that's the reason why, for those in there, you know, didn't know why Prince would always come to Detroit. Why he always, who is Detroit to be? I mean, but that's the main reason, because he was so large in Detroit. And it was around the 1999 era where I was sold. You couldn't stop me from listening to the Prince and Red Corvette and Lady Cab Driver and so on and so on. And Purple Rain, yes, I went to the movies 10 different times in the 80s to see that movie. 11 Lifetime to the theaters. I've seen that movie over 20, 30 times. I know the script, what happens, when it happens, and all of that. So,
$400 cash, man.
Yes. Yes. So,
y'all are tripping.
Yes. I mean, you can't get over Stick Around, Show You How It's Done. I mean, the language, the movement, the attitude, the whole nine. You could be a fan. You could be a
you
fan.
You had to. You had but to. When Billy you, Park, when Billy Sparks said, nobody liked the music but yourself. Like, that's classic. Where else you gonna ever find that? You can't find that anywhere else.
Oh, man. It just, oh, my goodness. It just over and over. It just, man, you could be a fan, but when you actually embody and take on and just you become a mind mate, and that's my testimony, and I'm today, I can't still wrap my mind around the fact that he's not physically here. I'm like Florida Evans. I still ain't got to the sink with that glass bowl yet. So, man, I can't even wrap my mind around it.
Okay,
but
stop it
before testimony.
You make me cry.
okay, yes,
listen.
Ma'am.
I want to remind the listening audience to press 1 on their phone if they have comments. So far, I don't have any more ones on the phone. But, Brother Jamil, I want to get back to something that you said, because what I do know personally is that I have the distinct honor and blessing of a lot of knowing a lot of musical artists. And I can tell you, amongst the male artists, there's this, I would say, lifetime rumor or perception of Prince and his sexuality and his, how can I put it, I guess his bold expression of sex. And I know one brother in particular said, well, Prince is the epitome of sex. Prince taught me how to pimp women. But I want those people who may have that perception, especially the women, especially my sisters out here, who may have looked at him and said he was gorgeous, he was sexy, he was fine, he was this, I would give my right arm to spend a night with him, whatever you would say. I want to validate that my brother was not really like that. As he expressed to me, his eroticism was mostly mental, more so than physical. And, of course, women would throw themselves at his feet and throw their underwear on stage and run after him and fall out and faint and do all of these things. But the thing about Prince is that if you could not stimulate his intellect, you would never stimulate his loins. That's just, that was just the rule of thumb that he played by. He loved intelligent conversation. Yes, he loved beautiful women, but you really had to capture the mind of him. He was not a sex fanatic, and he thought of sexual relations as a spiritual entity between two people. It wasn't about lust necessarily. But how he explained it to me, he says, I have eroticism, which is another part of me that is forbidden, but I can express it through my music, but I can't live my life that way. I'm not quoting him, but that's how he broke it down to me. But I was thinking about that when you were saying how much of a gentleman he was, and when he was married, how he would not embrace women. But I can tell you that if you were in his presence, and you would feel like a queen, because he was full of chivalry, and he would take care of you and make sure that you were taken care of. That's the kind of man that he is. And I'm sorry that he was. And another thing, Brother Jamil, if you don't mind, I want you to expound, if you can, on the importance of Prince emancipating himself from traditional musical contracts that all of these big record producers and record companies have, and the impact that it has had on independent artists today.
Wow. Those are two key areas. I'm going to start with the business piece, and then I want to drop something back about, as another witness of Prince's character as it relates to the issue of sex, which is a hot-button word for most deal with that issue at all, because they're frankly far too righteous to ever acknowledge that sex exists. Now,
yeah, right.
But in business, yes, in business though, Prince, like his intellectual pursuits and capacity, he was a larger than life figure. In order to understand that, Prince was at least as big in music as Kurt Flood was in baseball and athletics. Seven, I don't know if you're still on the line. I know, Sister Gizzy, you remember Kurt Flood, who was married to Judy Pace, the actress, and was an outfielder for the St. Louis Cardinals in the 1960s, who challenged what was called the reserve clause in baseball, which allowed the owners of the baseball teams to pretty much own the baseball player's contract and pay that baseball player whatever he wanted to pay that player, because the player couldn't go anywhere else other than that one baseball team. So it is in music and entertainment.
when these record companies own you, as you've seen many times in movies, everybody from the NWA movie, all straight out of Compton, you saw it in Five Heartbeats with the Red character, and Red was just a small-time operator. These big operators, these big corporations, they own everything that you do. And when Prince is selling 3 and 4 million copies of a single CD at $12 a piece, you do the math. 4 million at 12, that comes out to $48 million, right? Just for one, just
right.
for the CD, not the appearance fees that are connected with touring behind it. Now, in most cases, you think, well, yeah, the artist gets $24 million and the record label gets, no, the record label gets everything except about 75 cents per CD is what the artist gets. And then the artist is charged into that 75 cents per CD. The record company collects if they have given that artist an advance or paid his rent or helped him pay his bills or bought him a piano or a new pair of boots to wear on stage. So it's a game. It's slavery. Prince emancipated himself literally from that slavery by means of the applying of the symbol to his face with the word slave. And him saying that since Warner Brothers say they own his name, which is a concept that is only acceptable in corporate circles, that someone can own your very name other than you. See, this is how crazy they were. Prince fought them, and he ended up with ownership of his own catalog of music. Very, very rich. When he won his catalog of music, some people say, and I don't think they're wild-eyed conspiracy theorists, but some people say that Prince became a liability to the record companies, that they wanted to get his catalog back by inheritance, that they want and legal wrangling, and that they wanted to be able to send a message to others who would be independent, you can raise up if you want to. But Prince was not afraid of them. And that is why you said in the first part of your comment, sister, that women say he's just the epitome of a man. Because a man is not under the control of, he won't bow down to, he's not licking the boots of another man. Prince didn't do none of that.
Right.
He stood up for himself. He doesn't express himself in terms of what somebody else thinks he ought to do. He's a free man. And when that person is a free man, they can begin to think the path and walk the road of freedom. I've been told by Minister Farrakhan in a personal conversation with me. He said to me, brother, he said at one time years ago, he said, brother, don't you know you're the second freest black man in America? I said, sir. He said, you answer to me, brother. He said, I'm the freest man in this country. I go where I want to go, do what I want to do. I worry about Allah. He said, you have to report to me. He said, but I don't put you under no heavy constraint. You are free to help me because I trust that you will do so. So you're the freest man beside me in the country. Imagine being free, like that was me being free, but Prince is free with talent. He's free with talent and with ability and with skill and with charisma and with gifts that he gave to the world. So this man was powerful. He was not in any way, Prince was not no whorish man. Never saw evidence of that in my time with him, nor have I ever heard any anecdotal evidence of it. He's not a whorish man, and he was not in any way gay. But Prince understood that in his expression of his erotic, and I hate that word erotic because it comes from all kinds of roots that are really, really unsavory, but in the Greek language where Greeks were just into all kinds of things. But in his expression of his sensual being, of his sensual ideas, he freed people to express themselves in that part of their life in an appropriate expression. That's why he was so beloved by so many different people. Not because he was a gender bender. If you look at Prince's life, and I'm going to finish my comment by saying this, one of the great unsung heroes of Prince's life, particularly in the last years of his life, in the 90s up through 2000 and 2010, Prince, one of the great heroes in his life was his tailor. Prince's tailor kept him clean as hell. If you see Prince at the Super Bowl in the teal blue suit with the orange silk shirt, Prince is just laid. Mm-hmm. His stuff is fitting properly. He's banging. He's Prince. Like, I'm a rock star. I can't dress like I'm going to work on Wall Street. I'm a rock star, dude. I gotta do things different. And as he did them, he defined himself with elegance and class and style and whimsy. There's another photograph I love of Prince walking. Looks like he's over in the United Kingdom. I can't tell where he is, but it's a rainy, overcast day. And he's walking into, obviously, an event, and umbrellas are being held over his head. And he has on a gray cashmere jacket, gray silk slacks. I mean, he's banging. He got the shades on. He's just being Prince. He's doing his thing clean. He's walking in. Prince ain't no guy, and he was nobody's pimp. And I say that not because I love pimps or admire them. No, pimps trade in a very unsavory stock, which is the body and dignity of young women. And that's terrible. Terrible. But Prince was not a man who was pimping. Prince was a man who touched the souls of women, and they would be able to give or wanted to give him their whole self because he touched something in them that was private, and he honored it. He touched something in them that was secret, and he honored it. He touched something in them that was personal, and he honored it, and he never laughed at them for being who they were, and he demanded in return that he be respected for who he was. And that's what I think made Prince the great artist that he is, or was, I should say.
Yes, sir. Okay. I just want to remind people to press 1 on their phones if you have a comment or a memory that you want to share about Prince. Brother 7. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I closed my chat room. Oh, I'm sorry. Brother 7, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Can
so
you hear me?
Yes, sir. So I just want to ask you a question, then we're going to listen to a song from our beloved brother. Tell me something. What was the first song you ever heard by Prince?
I Want to Be Your Lover was the title of the song that I heard from Prince. They played it so much.
That was the first song you heard?
The absolute first song that I heard, and it was so new because, if I'm not mistaken, it was 1977, and that time
you
had
79.
It was 79.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I went back too far. Whereas Parliament Funkadelic was heavy. You also had Anita Baker, and when she was with Chapter 8, Patrice Rushen. You also had B-52s, oh my God, Bus Boys, and that
know,
new wave music.
About.
Yeah, this was that was the new wave stuff that Detroit played. Detroit was so, man. I don't even know what to say, but there was a lot of that. And he came on the scene with that very, very high falsetto, and it was unlike Philip Morris from the Starts Winning Fire with Reasons.
Philip Bailey.
I'm sorry. Who was Philip Morris? Oh, the actor. Philip Bailey, yes. Let me get it corrected. Thank you, brother. And he had a, you know, a high falsetto, but this was just so new, and he just kept playing it over and over and over and over and over. And it wasn't until his, you know, like I said, second and third and fourth and albums and such where he started to really resonate with me.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's funny that you answer the question that way, Seven. Sister, what was your favorite? What was your first Prince song that you heard?
The first Prince song I heard, I think it remains in his vault. It was something that he hummed to me, halfway sung and hummed to me over the phone, and it was called Flower. And it was something that he was working on. And mind you, like I said, this was before he was Prince, this international artist. And his attorney and my brother were frat brothers, and, you know, and my brother knows I love music, and we're just talking about music. And I challenged him. I say, you don't even look like you can talk, let alone sing. So he sung this song, and it just amazed me, the voice that came out of him. And like you said, Brother Jamil, how he had this heavy, heavy speaking voice. And but this was very soft, very mellow, with a slight falsetto. And I was just like, wow. And I was sharing with Brother Seven that that when I went into the record store, should I say Recusto?
Recusto.
In Prince's honor, Recusto. When I went into the record store, I saw his album, and here was this young man with this huge afro, which we all had at the time, and with this expressionless face. And
you're talking about the For You, that album, For You?
Yes, the For You album. And I passed by the album and said, oh, my God, he's an angel. And that was just the first thing that came to me. But mind you now, I'm all of 14, 15 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
And who would have thought that I would have come to know, you know, him in the light that I did. But that particular experience will always stay with me. It's a personal one that I won't share because I don't want people to think I'm crazy. But to me, I instantly knew that he was something special, or someone special, not something, but someone very special. And I knew that in God's way, in Allah's way, he has something to offer us. And even when he first came on the scene, and when he would show up naked, and when he would show up, you know, with his butt out, and he would show up with the makeup, and he would show up with the powder on his face, I never had the pleasure to misunderstand, because I got to know the person first, not so much the entertainer, but the person. And to watch him evolve and bear witness to what Allah put in my heart when I first saw him was somewhat amazing to me. And there's just a couple of secrets that Prince and I have. And the other secret that I'm not going to tell, but there are actually lyrics to Purple Rain during his guitar solo that he says only I in Vanity have heard.
Okay.
And
well,
I just think, yeah, I think, you know, the guitar solo that's like, there are lyrics to that song. And if I'm even walking around the house singing it, it's just something about I can't even listen to the guitar solo without singing the lyrics, because they are absolutely beautiful. But he decided to extract that because it was so personal to him. And the most profound thing I can say that I've heard him say to me is that he said, a lot of my music is for you. And when he said for you, he meant to his listening audience. He said, but a great portion of my music is for God. So a lot of people have questioned Prince about the music in his vault.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, how can you accept a gift and never give it back? So some of my music is just mm-hmm. for God.
Mm-hmm.
And I was and that was just his way of paying homage to the Creator. And he was a lover of nature. You know, this guy had a blade of grass down to a science. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want people to think that just because he was a talented songwriter, a instrumentalist, a entertainer, that he was
mm-hmm.
at all academically challenged. Prince was very intelligent, very
mm-hmm.
well studied. And if you want to sit down and talk about scripture with this brother, you were
mm-hmm.
in for a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I want to just, you know, it's funny. You asked about those first songs. Like, you and Seven had these great experiences. I remember where I was when I heard the first Prince song, sister, and I tell you, it was kind of ghetto, but I'm going to go on and tell my story. It was a Friday afternoon, sister, and I was on Wisconsin Avenue. It was in the summertime in 1978. I was picking up my clothes from the tailor. You know how you get your stuff altered and some stuff are cleaned, and when you get that tailor bag and you hang them hangers over your finger, you just feel good. It's Friday, you got your little paycheck in your pocket, you're feeling good. I was going back to my car, which was a 1974 Oldsmobile Toronado 455 double barrel V8 engine. You understand
what I'm
saying? I'm going down to get in the car, and I turn on the radio, and I hear Soft and Wet. And I was like, what is this sound? Boom, doop, doom, doo, doo. Bump, bump, bump. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Bump, bump, bump. I'm like, what is that, you know? I remember staying in the vehicle a little longer so I could hear the DJ. I think it was Donnie Simpson on WKYS in Washington, D.C. I was on Wisconsin Avenue. And I remember waiting for him to say who this artist was. He says, a young cat, Prince. He might be going places. And I remember that. I said,
mm-hmm.
okay, that's cool. But I remember how he would always strive to break what you just said just now, sister. He would break convention to show you don't have to do it the way everybody else said you got to do it. When on that same album, the next album, the self-titled album, Prince, with the light blue album, right, where Brother
mm-hmm.
Seven is talking about, you know, I Want to Be Your Lover was on that album, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the other one called Sexy Dancer, which is mainly an instrumentalist, right? Or instrumental, but, you know, with some chorus over it, right? But when you hear, you know, the whole Prince is doing all kinds of stuff. It's like rock and roll. It's like funk. It's like soul. It's like gospel. It's like pop. It's symphonic. He defied categorization. And he defied being put into a buttonhole. And that's what made him great and able to touch as many people as he touched, because he was a master. I think God opened up in Prince a vehicle for so many different things. And somebody said, well, you know, Prince could do these. I mean, he didn't do this as well as this entertainer. Or he didn't do that as well as this. He didn't play guitar as well as Hendrix. Or he didn't sing as well as this one or that one. But Prince didn't have to do any of that. He could do it all. And so he could actually
mm-hmm.
put on a program or put on a show. His concert was a steady 2.5-hour concert. I was also blessed
three,
to see him in
if
concert.
If you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't let him get in the groove. But it was at least 2.5 hours. And the boy was bad. He could do anything he wanted to do with any instrument. What he heard in his mind and heart, that music for God and that music for himself, he shared it in such a way that he was the conduit. He was the hinge that swung the door open and closed. He was the one that was the fulcrum upon which the whole thing spun around and operated. And I was just very blessed to hear him. So
And tonight I'm thinking of things I haven't thought of in a long time. Since I really am glad you're doing this show. I can't wait to hear the callers and the chat room. I know it's going to be hot tonight.
Yeah, well, they kind of quiet, and I don't know what I did to my chat room, but it's loading. So, Brother Seven, can you get on? Can you get on your phone?
Yes, I would have to get off the call, I believe. Yeah, I would have to get off the call.
Oh, no, don't do that. It's loading. It's loading. It'll load. You know, we using Wi-Fi because we out and about away from home. Okay, well, listen, I'm going to play this song, and Brother Seven, you say you've never heard it, but to me, it's some of his later best work. So here's mm-hmm. Come On. Bye. All right, that was Come On by Prince. I know that's not one of his most popular songs, but I love that song. I just do. Now, listen, from what I understand, there's a phone problem with Blog Talk. Something about, okay, y'all, hold on. Oh, I can't stand technology. Okay, but we're going to keep right on going for a few minutes. Brother Jamil?
I'm here. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so, you know, a lot of people don't know about the humanitarian side of, did I say that right? Humanitarian side of Prince. And I just want you to briefly share with us about Baltimore.
Good question. Prince, unbeknownst to a lot of people, and I want to say this with a caveat for who I am and the perspective from which I'm speaking as a person who has given the bulk of my life in an attempt to help Minister Farrakhan in his work in the Nation of Islam. A lot of people don't know that Prince gave $50,000 to help make the Million Man March possible. He gave more money than that in private that I'm not at liberty to discuss to make other events happen around this country. When people were unemployed, Prince would then hire them and invest in new businesses on the condition that it would never be told that he had done that charity. He did not want the word to come out. He was a beautiful, charitable soul and a humanitarian. But when you ask about Baltimore, if you remember in April of 2015, on April the 27th of that year, 25th, I believe, Freddie Gray was killed in Baltimore in a police van. His neck was broken. He died a week later in the hospital after the event had taken place. But none of the police officers who were implicated in his death were convicted, and they all six walked free. They ruled that it was a homicide, but the six officers of the police department in whose charge Freddie Gray had been were not convicted. Before all of that unfolded, Prince responded immediately, coming to Baltimore to play in a benefit concert for the community in Baltimore, and composed a song called Baltimore. I wish I could pull it up. But he was a man of great sensitivity, feeling of his people. And he was not afraid to stand up for his people and to make a difference for them, for us. He was just a remark. I don't even know how you knew I was a Prince fan. I don't even know you, if you knew that. I mean, you just called me to do the show, and I figured I didn't. Last time I told you no, that I wasn't going to do your show, I looked outside my window, and it was two Lincoln Town cars, black Lincoln Town cars, sitting out there with the engine running. And I said, okay, well, listen, I will never tell her no ever again, you know. So I just want to let you know today, I said yes, yes. Jamil is friend. Jamil is a friend. Jamil, good person. Okay, but no, there's a lot to it. Prince is a great human. I keep speaking of him in the present tense, please.
I do too, because he's still with us, I believe. I think he jammed up our phone lines, and he's messing with my board. And you know why I say that? Because there are so many people who said, I had Prince on video. I've taken pictures of Prince, and then I get home, and the photo is black. And, you know, all these little silly rumors about him being able to levitate and stuff like that, I think that just speaks to how extraordinary that he was. I don't believe in spookism. I don't think he had special powers or anything like that. It was just something about him, and that was another entity of him. He was good at bringing people together across racial lines, across faiths. You know, he had gotten to a point where I know he was practicing Jehovah's Witness, but at the end of the day, he really didn't care what faith you were, as long as you praise God in whatever fashion was suitable to you. And I think we can learn a lot from his life and his spirituality. And if you ever go to one of his concerts, and I pray that my screen and stuff comes back up, because before we go, I wanted to play The Ladder, which is one of his more spiritual records. But I love that song. I love the spirit in which he wrote those lyrics. And
for
how
people who
he,
are looking up that song, if you're looking up The Ladder, it's not L-A-T-T-E-R, it's L-A-D-D-E-R.
D-D-E-R,
it is,
yes.
It is, in other words, the means of ascent into a higher understanding and a more heavenly existence. I don't want to give it away, but Prince was always encouraging us to get up, to go higher, to look above, to find the most sublime and beautiful things in life, and then to come to those beautiful things and approach them with respect for the creator of all the beauty that you perceive. So this was, in a nutshell, what I saw Prince's career leading us to do. And it was just a great thing. And it had to go through. It had to go through Raspberry Beret. It had to go through, Under Cherry Moon. It had to go through Dirty Minds. It had to go through the Black Album.
Mm-hmm.
It had to. Because those were phases on the way of development. It has to.
Right.
And there's a place and a time for everything. Because if you cannot remember, if you get so ascended that you can't remember how to give your wife a hug or give your husband some sugar, then you done messed up anyway. So that's my view.
Yes. And, you know, and the thing about that, I think in his latter years, he often talked about the government's systematic way of doing things and how he would travel to different countries and how a lot of other countries were kind of structured based on the Bible or how they incorporated those original rules that were given in Scripture. And how we all needed to get back to that. And so I think that if any of us call ourselves friends of Prince, because he did not like the word fans, because he said fan means that you're a fanatic, and he don't like fanatics. So if you were a friend
right.
of Prince, I think in his memory that you would promote that unity, promote that love. It starts with each individual for you to exude from yourself onto someone else in order to make all of us better. In his latter years, that was a lot of his conversation, and he had time to kind of sit back and reflect on the condition of this world and our people and the way that government systems were actually depleting the life out of not only the earth but out of people themselves. And I want to encourage anyone who's listening to, if you know, I don't know how he would feel about this, but then again, I think that he would be pretty much okay with it at this point. But it is on YouTube, and it's called The One Song from the Vault. And it's just basically Prince talking about that subject, about our condition, about illusion and delusion. And the one thing that stuck with me, he said, the word confused. When he said that our lives are like the word confused, con meaning against and fuse meaning together. So we're being contradictory in the way that we're dealing with our lives and dealing with one another. And I'm not trying to preach, but
you're doing a good job. I love it. Go ahead. Teach.
No, but I'm just, you know, I cannot believe I'm getting emotional, but I'm just being flooded with memories and thoughts of him. And at the end of it all, I don't have any internal peace with his departure because I don't have a definite know-how. It's unsafe to publicly make accusations, but then again, we don't know. We can always assume. But the one thing that I can say strongly that I believe is that we all return back to Allah, God, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that energy is not created nor is it destroyed. It's merely transformed. So I would love to believe, and I do believe that our brother has been transformed into another source of energy. And just to share what my father used to teach me, he says that when a loved one's body dies and goes back to the earth, he say there's one thing that the human person or that man cannot count. And I asked him, I said, well, Daddy, what is that? And I was about 8 years of age. He said, no man can count the stars. And he says, every soul becomes a star. He said, when you look up in the sky, those stars that appear brightest to you are the energy of the loved ones that have gone on and ascended and transformed that energy. And I just would like to believe that my brother's song, Baby, I'm a Star, is real. And
you might not know it now. Baby, yes, I am.
Yeah, and I'm going to be quiet for a moment. So, Brother Seven, I'm sorry, my computer, and it could be the Wi-Fi. I'm in Harlem, so it could be the Wi-Fi here, so I can't get on, but the mic is still live. So, Brother Seven, if you would come in and share some sentiments, and I'm going to go get me some tissue.
Yes, ma'am. As I've said before, I still haven't been able to wrap my mind around the fact that he's not physically here. More so, and I don't want to ever minimize a life, but more so than anything, outside of the voice of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, musically, the universe is silent. The energy of our brother Michael Jackson, that was an energy that we were able to share. Yet, the music, it's got the universe silent now. And it's the reason I believe it is so hard to really come to grips with is because it was silenced abruptly. There's no fathoming way that I could conceive why he should have been silent. You know, those with no soul, those with no heart, no human being within them, they would not understand. It wasn't just business. It wasn't just music. And he definitely wasn't a soul that was alone.
Mm-hmm.
He connected into so many people in a way that it transcended just life. You know, it's almost, I mean, it's really incomparable, you know, and nothing would compare to him, you know. Yes, you know, when you were little and you looked at the Michael Jackson cartoon, and you may have gotten a chance to see a show or see the Jackson 5, and when he first came out with Rock With You and Victory and so on and so forth, and when you were there, when you saw Motown Live 25 and he did the moonwalk, and there was times in your life, but the feeling of sitting wherever you were and just listening from the note you heard all the way to the end of that song of Prince, that was a time in your life. And mm-hmm. now we don't have times like that anymore. I know that, you know, everybody ain't gone, you know, Barry White and Luther. And they took a piece of that romantic soul away. Yeah, we still got Jaheim and Tyrese and, you know, a few others and Usher and such. But, you know, for Prince, he had the music of the, you know, I mean, you could listen to this whole album. Who does that? And 25 years later, he's still platinum. Really? Who does that? You know, where they can't.
You know, one of the things that people do, though, Seven, that really amazes me, and this is why where people have to give Prince his due as a musician, and in an industry that sorts through and weeds out people who cannot remain durable because they can't remain profitable. Prince remains durable, profitable, and he remains educable, in the sense that he is somebody that is always a musical teaching moment. The great titans of the music industry can be used. You can use one name, and you know who you're talking about. You can say Prince. You can say Sinatra. You can say Elvis. You can say Duke. See? You can say Ella. See, you can say these one names. Prince is a man who is, his music does not get dated. Another person to give an example of that is Marvin Gaye, whose music does not sound old. It sounds classical and it sounds new and it's updated all the time because it speaks to a universal reality. Such was Prince's impact and his intellect that he spoke to universal realities. I'm not knocking anybody, but if you speak to a current trend in a moment's time, which is a fad that's going to quickly go out of style, your music will be forgotten. So everybody can remember, if you were around back then, that for a hot blip on the moment's schedule, you could hear, Izzo Kizzo, Izzo Rizzi Kizzo, Izzo Rizzi. The double Dutch bus going down the street. Everybody goes, what is that? But nobody can remember Frankie Smith unless you're weird like I am. But see,
well,
Frankie Smith.
Actually, I do because I bought that.
Yeah. Frankie Smith is not a classical performer in the sense that he did not address universal themes in classical musical figures. He did not address the discipline and the depth of performing arts and taking your skill to the people. Prince was a troubadour as well as a musician, a troubadour who actually went in the highways and byways bringing his gift, to the people. That's why I think it's important what you're saying, brother. You're hitting it right on the head in the sense that who does that? Who makes classics that 25 years later are platinum or are still thought of or are still remembered and studied? It is only the giant. When you look at Miles Davis and the album, right, Kind of Blue or All Blue, right? You look at Kind of Blue as an album and you hear those songs on it, those tunes are going to be there because they're classic and they address a certain moment in time, yes, but they also speak before they were created and long after their creators have passed back to the earth. That means that there was something divine there. Like what Sister Gidja was saying earlier, there's a divinity in the process of creativity. In fact, God is called the Creator. So it all comes full circle. That's great.
True indeed.
Absolutely beautiful. And I'm sorry, we're going to have to make this a playback show where people can upload it and play it or whatever, because Blog Talk is having some issues and I'm having issues on this end. So we are going to make the show available for those who want to hear it again. And if we have to do a part two, it won't be until at least maybe on the first anniversary of his passing or something like that, because I can't do this too often. The last thing I'm sorry, go ahead. Yes, sir.
One of the ironic things that to understand and know is his last performance.
That's the piano.
April 16th.
Mm-hmm.
That's my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And you will never forget it.
Not only could I not forget my born day of birth, but why that day? You know, why him? Why, you know, it's just, man.
Well, you know, I think Allah has his own purpose for doing that. And that's why I say in a lot of ways, I know I'm going to have to find some peace with this, because no one dies unless Allah permits it. But I'm going to take it as for every opportunity and gift that we gained from Prince is a lesson of the lives that remain. And if we really get caught up in why he departed, I think at the end of the day we'll realize that it doesn't make a difference in a lot of ways, because we can't get that life back, but we will never allow anyone to steal Prince from us. And when I say steal Prince from us, I mean by the tactics that they use to try to write people out of history, especially people who transcended rules like Prince did. He wasn't just a corporate entity. He was his own man, as Brother Jamil said, and he was a liberator and a freedom fighter in his own way. And so we will not allow them to write Prince out of history. They attempted to do the same thing with the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but as we see today, that Elijah is with us and is alive, and we live by that each and every day, and we represent that. And so those of us who are, like I said, whether you love music, whether you are a musician or a vocalist or any kind of musical artist, if you are living in this time, if you did not learn anything from Prince, if there's not one song that you did not appreciate from Prince, then you're not a musical artist. And that's my... that's how I feel about it, and I'm not apologizing to anybody about it. That's just the truth, and that's the way I feel about it. Because
as you close the show tonight, I thank you for that statement, sister. Because That's a kindred spirit that is in artists. And I don't know if you've had a chance to go on this program and actually delve into your early career as a vocalist, being gifted with a vocal talent even as a preteen that put you in contact and had you co-working and being on programs and bills and with some of the greatest musicians and singers that Black America has ever produced, whose names are still ringing in folks' ears. But when you talk about that, you're talking about the fraternity, the sorority, the fellowship of musicians that most of us who are not trained musicians cannot even approach to appreciate. I'm close enough to it that although I'm not a virtuoso on any, my instrument is the radio. That's what I play. I play the radio, but I play it really, really well.
Now, Brother Jamil, hold on. Now, you know I love you, but I will tell anybody and I'll tell everybody right here publicly that Brother Jamil is shucking and jiving y'all, because I don't know what you hear when you sing, Brother Jamil, but you have one of the most soothing voices that I have ever heard. Your voice to me is as soothing as Nat King Cole. And it's,
well,
it's
that's
soft.
What, that's what Lena Horne used to tell me. That's what Lena Horne used to say to me all the time. Yeah.
It's I've never heard you sing like loudly. I've never even heard you sing a complete song. But when you give us samples of music that you heard and songs that you like, I have a musical ear, so I hear. You're very smooth. You know, it speaks to your persona, but it also speaks to your musical ability. So I'm just letting everybody know. Don't let Brother Jamil fool you as if he's just totally oblivious to what musical talent is and abilities are, because what did you tell me one time? You was a good doo-wop singer or whatever? The brother can sing, okay? Stop it.
All right.
Get
All
off
right.
the
Thank
gas.
Thank you for that. No. Okay. All right. Let me take my foot off the gas. But let me just tell you, as we prepare to leave, Prince's musicianship, his performing chops, his respect within the musical community, his encouragement for other musicians to bring out the best in themselves, for him to be that unique a personality does not mean that we will never ever see anything like him again. God has the ability to create what he chooses, but in our lives there has never been anyone else like him. So my brother Seven said something that we all can agree upon and concur with, that tonight musically, with the absence of Prince from the daily creative scene, the universe is silent in many ways. But the universe, once again, the echo of the previous masterpieces begins to increase in volume if we tune to the spiritual frequency in which Prince created those masterpieces. And they may not be dealing with subjects that you think of as spiritual, but they're almost universally or as religious per se. Prince wasn't singing, you know, Lord Jesus or Oh Allah or Oh My Goodness, Heaven to the Prophets. He wasn't talking about that. But he was talking about something universal in the human condition that strives for betterment and improvement and progress. And there's not a single soul who can't relate to that. That's what made him great in a nutshell. And I look forward to hearing on this program in the future more discussion of that. I'd love to hear you, sister, talk more about your career in the early stages, because those stories fascinate me. You performing on a bill with my vocal hero, the man that I looked up to, Johnny Taylor and Bobby Blue Bland and these other folks coming through Texas during your youth. This is fascinating stuff, you know, a Little Milton and all those other folks. Tyrone the Wonder Boy. Well, but I turn back the hands of time. You know what I mean? But those people, those people who affected your career and helped you develop your chops. Music is a universal gift from God. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I'm not going to make a shameless plug because I'm not ashamed, but the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is finishing up now his preparations to release his long-awaited musical album of collaborations with some of the great legends and creative stars of our time. Everybody as diverse as Tina Marie and Denise Williams and Snoop Dogg and some of everybody is on there with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Chaka Khan, and others who are lending their talents and gifts and skills. Some of the great arrangers, Paul Reiser, the string arranger, who really was responsible for the symphonic aspect of the Motown sound in the 60s and the 70s. These brothers, Kenny Gamble, Leon Huff, the sound of Philadelphia, all these folks are with the minister, and the album is about to drop. You're about to see that the spirit that my sister talked about tonight is real. Stay close to your local Muhammad Mosque. Stay close to your Final Call newspaper. Stay close to your computer, your telephone, whatever, because when it drops, you're definitely going to want to get yours first. I know that here in San Francisco, we're grateful for the labor and the work of our local administrations of the San Francisco and Oakland mosques here. Brother Christopher, Brother Keith, they're doing a work like nobody has ever done, and we're sure that there's similar work going on throughout the nation. So let's get ready. Let's get pushing. Let's get ready to keep our spirit alive. Prince wouldn't have it any other way. And I just thank you for having me. I'm going to sign off. I really am grateful. You know I love you, sis. I'm not going to say it again, but I love you so strong. I love you so strong. You're just a bad black woman. May Allah continue to bless you for using the airwaves responsibly to communicate life to our people. And I just want to thank you for having me. I really do.
Brother Jamil, the honor is mine, and what a gift of wisdom and experience, and I love you so much, and I thank Allah for you, and I thank Allah for your service to our nation. You know what I call you, the father of my wisdom, and I can tell you that you just have a way of teaching that is so easily digestible that it makes comprehension simple. And I think for me, throughout my years, hearing the teachings coming from you made it so easy to absorb, and it made it so easy to stand up and be an MGT and take the responsibility and the duty of being a righteous Muslim. And I tell you, that would not exist in me had it not been for you, because you come with a loving touch, not a demanding touch, not an intimidating touch, but always, always, always with love. And so I still title you our greatest student minister in the nation, and I don't care who differs. I really don't. Brother Seven, before we go, I'm going to give you a chance to close out in anything you want to say before we go.
Well, I would just like to say, no matter what, He will forever be in our lives. Yes, we all hope to see the dawn. And stay emancipated. And your life is not lived through a crystal ball. And if you ever find yourself on Alphabet Street, party on. Like Party Man. You can do the bat dance.
Oh, God, he would love that.
And,
that's work. How did you? What did you drive down here to the program tonight? Did you? Is that you parked outside, Sister Gidget, in that little red Corvette?
A little red Corvette. You know that's me.
Because the lady cab driver couldn't take it.
No.
All right. Well, before we go, I want to say that I'm thankful that I had a chance to say thank you and kind of give him his flowers while he was here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll consider him one of God's greatest creations. As a musical artist myself, I can never thank Allah enough for the gift of Prince. I can't thank Allah enough for Maddie Shaw and John Nelson, the avenue or the vessel that produced a Prince Rogers Nelson. So as I said to him, my brother, my friend, my love for you will never end. I love you now. I've loved you since, and I will always love you, Prince. And so, with that being said, we're going to close out with one of his more spiritual tunes, The Ladder. Thank you all. And may Allah continue to bless us all. If it's
peace.
Right. Well, I guess it's not going to play, y'all. This has been terrible. But you know what? I got a feeling. Prince probably heard that first song, Nothing Compares to You, and heard that audio, and he shut this bad boy down. I'm being spooky right now, but it's not playing, y'all. So thank you all for listening. The show will be available tomorrow for playback. May Allah continue to bless us all. Please, in memory of Prince, let's take care and love one another. Good night, y'all. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalam.